welcome to another episode of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. A progressive and populist insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining show on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people and not just the elite few. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters from his mid-Michigan attic, it's time for the award-winning Pat Johnston. It's all yours, Pat.
Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston. And to further illustrate just how feeble the MAGA Republican mind really is and how secure many MAGA men are over their sexuality, the campaign for MAGA Michigan Republican Senate candidate Florida Mike Rogers had to use some artificial intelligence to buff up the porky Mike and make him look like he's built like some kind of movie star. Now, I'm told that MAGA men relate to average guys out there because they look like the average guy. But in the age of Trump, a little fakeness, lots of plastic, and lots of makeup is what I'm told is MAGA manliness. Or in this case, a little AI is used to transform Florida Mike's dumpy body to make it look like he's ready to become the next James Bond. But wait, I thought these guys were always against changing your bodies. It's just following Trump's playbook where his people make up those videos showing him scoring goals in hockey games, you know, like Vladimir Putin, or flying planes to drop dump on American protesters, while in reality, dear leader is in desperate need of a little sleepy time, and he's in need of more makeup to hide those bruises on his hands. These MAGA guys claim to be manly men, but in reality, they're just insecure little children. So they transform themselves into something they ain't. Wait, am I saying MAGA Republicanism and its definition of manliness is fake? Hey, I just report it. You decide it. LeftofLansing@gmail.com is the best way to reach me. Follow Left of Lansing on YouTube and also sign up for Left of Lansing on Patreon and follow me on my socials. I received a lot of hits on some of my posts this week, including one where I shared a picture that I took while walking the dogs in my Gratiot County neighborhood this week. And I came across an Abdul El-Sayed for Senate campaign sign in front of a house on my block in Gratiot County. Now, to be honest, I haven't seen too many Abdul signs up here, but then again, I haven't seen any Haley Stevens signs, and I certainly haven't seen any Florida Mike Rogers signs either. It's just telling me that Michiganders, working class and Michiganders all across the state, are in a populist mood. But sadly, I learned something, too, is that I noticed that whenever I post something about Dr. Abdul, I mean, man, does that bring out the racist on the cesspool that is Twitter and also Facebook? And it's done with such ease, too. I mean, here we are calling anyone who dares criticize Israel's right-wing and genocidal government and anti-Semite. Yet all these racist MAGA Republicans have no problems whatsoever posting how Dr. Abdul will bring Sharia law to Michigan and how he's a terrorist. I mean, can you imagine if I called anyone who supports Israel a terrorist? I mean, how much blowback I would get? And our corporate media allows that stuff just to go by, especially when it's done not by clowns on social media, but also by real politicians in D.C. For example, progressive Democratic Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib of Detroit, who's a Palestinian American, introduced a resolution this week that would block U.S. forces from entering Lebanon. Israel's right-wing government continues to bomb and attack Lebanon, while dear leader Trump is struggling to get out of Iran, another war that Israel wanted us to fight. Anyway, the resolution probably won't pass because of some very serious centrist Democrats who want U.S. boots on the ground in Lebanon? Really, guys? It doesn't make sense, of course, and this is why Americans are in a populist mood. No more overseas wars, and no more of the United States fighting wars for Israel. All right, then there's this. During debate over Rashida Tlaib's resolution, Ohio MAGA Republican Max Miller said Rashida Tlaib was advocating for Hezbollah, which has been labeled a terrorist organization in Lebanon. Still waiting, though, for the U.S. to label Israel a terrorist organization since its leaders are wanted by international courts for its genocide in Gaza. Hey, I'm just stating facts. But this Ohio congressman, Max Miller, said that Rashida advocates for terrorists on a daily basis. Now, Tlaib requested Miller's racist statement be stricken from the record, which it was. But you see, being an Islamophobic MAGA congressman is A-OK. But speaking out or expressing or marching against Israel's right-wing government's genocidal actions or for the war in Iran, well, that gets you labeled an anti-Semite. However, a vote in the MAGA House of Representatives on whether or not to end the war in Iran with a War Powers Resolution vote happened, and for the first time, it passed. 4 MAGA Republicans joined with every Democrat in voting for the bill. And then there's this. It appears one Michigan MAGA Republican was one of those who voted to end the war. Guess who it was? That's right. It was Tom Barrett, who represents the 7th Congressional District. That's Alyssa Slotkin's old district, containing parts of Livingston, Oakland, and Ingham counties, also including East Lansing. And that's where progressive candidate and good friend of the show, William Lawrence, is charging ahead and leading in some polls. I mean, William Lawrence has the wind at his back so far. He recently got Bernie Sanders' endorsement, Rashida Tlaib's endorsement, the Sierra Club's endorsement, and the Working Family Party's endorsement. So something tells me that Tom Barrett's people are seeing some numbers, and they told him, hey, vote against Dear Leader Trump, or else you could be out of a job. The best part is, though, that William Lawrence has always been against Trump's and Israel's war in Iran from the very beginning, just like he's been against data centers, and just like how he wants to abolish ICE, and he believes in passing Medicare for all and making housing more affordable. Tom Barrett knows he is in trouble because he could be facing a real community-based and a real working-class fighter in William Lawrence. That's what the people want. They want a working-class fighter. They are tired about being ruled by billionaire tech bro authoritarians and also those inside the Epstein class. I guess maybe one and one goes together, right? Now, we know this War Powers vote was symbolic because Dear Leader Trump will veto it if it does pass the Senate. But it does put pressure on Florida Mike Rogers on what he'll do next, because just within the last couple of days, Mike Rogers says that he still supports Trump and Israel's war in Iran. Listen.
But you cannot allow Iran to get a nuclear weapon. Remember, they're already threatening to run the Straits of Hormuz, which would mean, my God, if they had the chance to do that, our gasoline would be $8 a gallon. Can't let them do that. I'd like a quick solution to this. And as I said, what I think all the politicians who are screaming and thumping their chest and running around saying this is the whole cause of all your misery.
Mike Rogers worries about politicians pounding their chest over higher gas prices due to this idiotic war in Iran. But he's not worried about how working class Michiganders have to deal with those higher gas prices. He is so out of touch and simply wants to become a senator to enrich his own pocketbook by working on behalf of the banking and defense industries. I mean, that's where he is just like Dear Leader Trump. He wants government to make him rich. And I'm still wondering if Mike Rogers has an answer as to why he put two guys on his so-called faith coalition who turned out were part of Mark Barclay's Living World Church, where 3 ministers have been convicted and sentenced for criminal sexual conduct with minors. Huh. Very interesting there, Mike. You really have great judgment for people, don't you? Now, one of those two guys who were part of this church and were part of Rogers' faith coalition has said that he should have done more to believe the victims when they were coming out. Now, why don't I believe you? Good job there, Florida Mike Rogers. You know how to pick them. This guy is pathetic. Mike Rogers is pathetic, and even more pathetic because for the second time in the last 2 months or so, he's downplaying gas prices. And some of you out there really think this clown has what it takes to win a Senate race this fall in Michigan, where Dear Leader Trump's numbers are crashing? Florida Mike Rogers is sticking close to Dear Leader Trump. He is basically saying he'll be a Trump rubber stamp in the Senate, which also means being a rubber stamp for industry and especially for Trump. I mean, you think Mike Rogers would dare speak up and demand the Line 5 oil pipeline to be shut down? No, he'll work on behalf of the oil and gas industry. Speaking of which, there's been a lot of news surrounding the continued fight to shut down the Canadian oil pipeline that travels through the Straits of Mackinac. The Trump regime is doing whatever it can to please that Canadian oil company, which is strange because I thought we hate Canada. Oh, I get it, but we love their oil. To give us a clearer view on the latest surrounding the news to shut down the 70-plus-year-old Line 5 pipeline, Dr. Jeffrey Insko from his Substack called The Current will be on to talk more about all of this in just a moment. You're listening to LOL.
Helping push a strong progressive message from Kalkaska to Kalamazoo, from Monroe to Marquette, from Detroit to DeWitt. from Trenton to Traverse City. Okay, Pat, I think they get the idea. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Show archives are available wherever you're listening to the show. Left of Lansing is now on Patreon. You can check out a complete archive of the show and other stellar content Pat doesn't share on the show. Visit patreon.com/leftoflansing. Become a member for free and check out Left of Lansing on YouTube as well. Now, here's Pat Johnston.
With so much political news happening at lightning speed, I just wanted to refocus on the battle to shut down Line 5 in the Straits of Mackinac since, you know, there's been some important news happening over the last couple of months on that front. The Line 5 oil and natural gas pipeline, which is owned by Canadian oil company Enbridge, is over 70 years old, yet it keeps operating at great risk to the Great Lakes and to the environment, to Michigan's economy, and to the public health of all Michiganders. Dr. Jeffrey Insko is a writer and author and English professor at Oakland University. He has a Substack called The Current, where he posts updates on the battle to shut down the Line 5 oil pipeline, amongst other things. But even more, Dr. Insko provides what I like the most is a thorough background and historical lens into how this pipeline really all started and its decades of harm to human, environmental, and yes, like I've said, economic health to Michigan and to other states along the Great Lakes. And yes, of course, also its harm to Canada as well. So Dr. Insko, thanks so much for coming back on Michigan's premier progressive podcast to talk more with us about Line 5. Hope everything is going okay.
I'm doing well. I appreciate you having me on, Pat. It's good to talk to you again.
You know, like I said, there is lots of news surrounding Line 5 over the past couple of months. So let's start with the Supreme Court, you know, and which, let's face it, they are not really known as the most environmentally friendly of all courts, but they ruled in Michigan's favor as Enbridge, the Canadian owner of Line 5, as I said, tried to get, I think, a case moved from state court to a federal court. And it was a ruling that was celebrated by Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel, as well as many others who've been fighting this battle. So, Jeff, can you go in a little bit more detail about that court ruling and, you know, kind of what it all means?
Sure. It's a rare victory for the good guys, and we were pleased to have it. Although, on the other hand, I think it was a no-brainer, and I would have been rather stunned, even for this court, if they had ruled the other way. So when Attorney General Nessel filed her suit to have the line shut down for violation of the public trust doctrine, at that time, Governor Whitmer's action revoking the easement was going on. And so we had sort of two parallel cases. And Enbridge moved to have the Whitmer case removed to federal court rather than state court because they thought they'd get a more favorable hearing in federal court, and did not do so for the Nessel case. And so what happened was at a certain point, Governor Whitmer withdrew her case, and only at that time did Enbridge move to have the Nessel case removed to federal court. The problem with that, that was 18 months after the suit was filed. And the basic rule in these proceedings is that you've got 30 days to file for removal. And Enbridge thought that for some reason they could get away with asking for removal a year and a half later. Oddly, a circuit court of appeals ruled initially in Enbridge's favor, but that was an outlandish decision. And by the time it made it to the Supreme Court, it was pretty clear that they were asking for an exception that would have been completely unprecedented. So it was a little bit of a no-brainer decision on the part of the U.S. Supreme Court. Mainly, though, you know, the important thing to recognize here that this was a procedural matter. You know, yeah. Enbridge, once again, imagined themselves as somehow exempt to the basic rules of legal proceedings. And this time they couldn't get away with it. So we're going to state court for the Nessel case.
Okay. And again, this is the fight over the easement. Is that right?
Yeah, this is a matter of enforcing the conditions of the easement. Although central to Nessel's case is that the easement was void from its inception because it violated the public trust doctrine. That Michigan has a trust in protecting the bottom lands of the Straits. And that basic trust was disregarded when the initial easement was agreed to.
Okay. So small victory, but take them, like you said, take them when you can get them, right?
Absolutely. Yes. And no small matter to have this adjudicated in state court because really a matter of state sovereignty. You know, Enbridge would have us believe that the Federal Pipeline Safety Act preempts every state action, which I think is just mistaken.
Okay, so now maybe you can help us with this. So we have that case going on. Is there another lawsuit that was filed by Enbridge where it's arguing that only the federal government has the authority to shut down the pipeline? Is there another case there?
Yep. So this is the bad news that came last December. when a federal court, a federal district court, ruled for Enbridge, agreeing with Enbridge that the Pipeline Safety Act, which gives the Pipeline Hazardous Materials Safety Administration jurisdiction over pipeline safety matters, that's a federal agency, preempts any state action to enforce safety regulations. This was a, I think, appeared initially as a pretty devastating decision, a federal judge ruling that this is a federal preemptive matter. However, the state is appealing that otherwise devastating decision. And so I think that question still remains open. Just a couple of months ago in, well, last month in May, a bunch of groups filed amicus briefs on behalf of the state, pointing out all the ways in which the decision that was made by the federal court judge in favor of preemption is misguided and wrongheaded. And so that's going back to the Sixth Court of Appeals. And I'm actually feeling fairly good about that. I don't know that the Pipeline Safety Act ever intended to erode the ability of sovereigns or property owners, whether it be states or individuals, to enter into private agreements with pipeline companies. And that's basically what that argument does.
So what Enbridge really wants, though, it really does want all these cases on the federal side of things. It really does not want to have to deal with state courts or anything like that.
100%. They think that their best chance is in the federal courts and reliance on the designated powers of PHMSA to regulate pipeline safety. But the state isn't really trying to regulate pipeline safety. It just so happens that there is overlap between provisions of the private agreement between the state of Michigan and Enbridge and safety matters.
Then let's remind everyone that a major fact that's corresponding with this whole fight and with Line 5 is Enbridge's plans, so-called, to build this tunnel around the pipeline at the bottom of the Straits of Mackinac. And last month, I think I was reading in Bridge, Michigan, Kelly House was the writer there, and she reported how regulators with the Michigan Department of Environment, Great Lakes, and Energy proposed to permit Enbridge Energy to discharge millions of gallons of treated wastewater per day into Lake Michigan as part of a proposed project to move Line 5 into a concrete-lined tunnel deep beneath the Straits of Mackinac. And she said, she wrote here that Eagle had originally granted the permit in 2021, but it has since expired. What's happening there? What's that all about?
Before talking about the Eagle permit, I just wanted to mention that over a year ago, the Michigan Public Service Commission granted Enbridge a necessary permit to construct that tunnel. That decision has been appealed, challenged in court. It has gone before the Michigan Supreme Court. So last March, there was a hearing in which those challenging that permit made their case that the MPSC's decision was misguided. And so that's also pending. The Department of Energy, Great Lakes, and Environment also has to issue permits in order for the tunnel project to go forward. And among those permits is, as you mentioned, and as Kelly House, who's a great reporter, has reported, that involves, among other things, wastewater discharge. And they've issued a preliminary report that indicates they may be inclined to issue that permit, which would entail, as you've mentioned, the discharge of millions of gallons of wastewater into the lake. And the decision on that is pending, expected in July. So there's still time for folks to write to Eagle and express their concern over the destructive activities that the tunnel construction is liable to cause in Lake Michigan on habitat and ecosystems and the health of the lakes generally.
Okay. So yeah, a lot of moving pieces happening right now when we're talking about this, especially on the judicial side of things. When was this tunnel, Jeff, supposed to be started and when was it projected to be finished?
You know, that's a funny question, Pat, because that's been an ever-shifting target. Folks who've been paying attention for a while might recall that the tunnel plan emerged at the 11th hour of the Snyder administration.
Right.
Lame duck legislature and agreed to this plan to allow Enbridge to bore a tunnel beneath the bedrock of the Straits of Mackinac. And at that time, you know, I mean, Enbridge projected it would take 7 to 10 years. The more pushback they received from the public about that plan, suddenly those timelines kept getting shorter and shorter, and they kept discovering, I don't know, new technologies or something that allowed them to complete it in 5 years and then 3 years. But it, you know, it's anybody's guess how long a project like that, even were it to be approved, is going to take. And I can't imagine it's going to take less than 7 or 10. And by that time, we're looking at 2030, 2035, and ever-increasing greenhouse gas emissions in the atmosphere. It's not going to seem to make much sense 7 or 10 years from now to be investing $1 billion on locking in fossil fuel combustion for another 100 years.
I'm going to ask a real stupid question. All
Sure.
right. And you can tell me, Pat, that's a stupid question.
I would never.
But you brought up how this tunnel idea was passed during the lame duck when Rick Snyder was still in office during those last few days in 2018. I mean, and maybe it would have been just symbolic, but was there something stopping when Democrats had the trifecta, you know, and Governor Whitmer in office to just pass a bill revoking that law, reversing that law? I mean, I don't know.
No, I think that's not a stupid question at all, Pat. I think it's a great question. I think that it's always been a little bit baffling to me that that was off the table for, I don't know, virtually every member of the Democratic Party. Not even the farthest, the most progressive member of the Democratic Party ever floated such a thing. And I'm really sure exactly what that's about, other than the labor union support of the tunnel project has always been a bit of a kind of political difficulty for the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I'm inclined to agree with you. I think that that trifecta could have revoked the tunnel plan altogether. But the labor unions and the oil lobby are a pretty powerful duo, hard for even the bravest to take on, unfortunately, in our political landscape.
So we've heard all these scare tactics from Enbridge on how, you know, closing down Line 5 is going to cause these massive rises in prices and our energy prices, fuel prices, and leaving residents. You know, we've heard this one before up in the UP without propane to heat their houses.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I've talked about it here on the show many times in the past. I mean, we got studies, including studies from those hired by Enbridge, by Enbridge themselves, that cutting Line 5 wasn't ever really going to lead to significant hikes in oil and fuel prices. And now we've got the Iran war that is raising our gas prices while Line 5 is still operating, yet our gas prices continue to rise. I think we're seeing that that argument was never, ever really a valid argument.
I think it's always been a disingenuous argument. And the thing for me that's frustrating about it is that we're almost 10 years out after the tunnel scheme was hashed out. And, you know, we could have spent the past 8 or more years planning for a reasonable and careful and an orderly transition to ensure that folks in the UP have their heating needs met and so forth. But instead, we've spent that time trying to prevent a multinational pipeline corporation from keeping us in the 20th century rather than moving toward the 21st.
What do you say to those who argue, and you know, I've been confronted with this and others, but I was just wondering, what's your response to those who say, well, we have to worry about the people in the Upper Peninsula? You know, what's going to happen if, you know, we shut down Line 5? Where are they going to be able to get their propane to ensure that they're warm during winter and it's not, and the price won't be skyrocketing for them?
For me, it's a twofold answer. And, you know, lots of folks who've been working on this issue have already demonstrated that the propane needs of the Upper Peninsula are easily met without Line 5. In fact, the Upper Peninsula, not to state the obvious here, but the Upper Peninsula is in fact north of the Straits of Mackinac. And so propane can be delivered by truck and other means in the short term to meet those energy needs, while we collectively as a citizenry, as a state, figure out what the long-term solutions are going to be, not just for energy needs in the Upper Peninsula, but in the Lower Peninsula and everywhere else in the country as well.
You know, another part I found strange about this Line 5 issue is how the Trump regime got us into this unnecessary trade war with Canada, which has led Trump and others in MAGA Republican world to say some unkind words about Canada. But at the same time, Trump and his fossil fuel buddies inside the regime don't seem to have a problem doing whatever it takes for this Canadian oil pipeline that's flowing through the Great Lakes and parts of eastern Michigan. It's funny how when it comes to Line 5, Canada is okay.
No, you have that exactly right. And I think, well, the expectation of coherent policy out of the Trump administration is a fool's game. I think we've all learned. But I think what we really know is how tenaciously both politicians, the industry, and unfortunately, too many ordinary folks just cling to fossil fuels when we know that they are a disaster waiting to happen, not just for the Great Lakes, but for the planet.
All right, Jeff, in your recent posting on The Current, you write about the Line 5 death toll. And I think it's a good way to remind everyone that while, yes, you know, we are in this fight to close down the pipeline, obviously to prevent a disaster from happening in our Great Lakes. But the pipeline has been a disaster for a great number of people. And so I was wondering if you could talk about that a little more.
I'd be happy to talk about it. And I think it's one of the most important and undertold stories of Line 5. So those petrochemical refineries in Sarnia just happened to encircle the reserve of the Amjinnan First Nation in Canada. And decades of air pollution and water pollution that includes the emission of chemicals like benzene and sulfur dioxide have wreaked havoc on the public health of the folks who live in proximity to those refineries. And for the Amjinnan, that's meant chronic skin rashes and headaches and high rates of cancer, high rates of birth defects. It's been a terrible case of environmental injustice. And so when we think about protecting the Great Lakes, which is important to me as one reason to call for the shutdown of Line 5, I think that we might want to add to that the damage that it has already done, especially to the folks who live in proximity to the petrochemical refineries where that oil winds up, gets produced, and turned into toxic pollutants.
So yeah, so this has really, really harmed a lot of people for a long time, unfortunately, for the time being, especially since we are divesting in clean energy, especially from what's happening on the federal side of things. I don't see things changing right now for the near term. But if we were able to get Line 5 shut down, what would please you, Jeff, at the end of this story? I mean, would you consider it a victory just to get the pipeline removed from the straits and, you know, going around somewhere else?
I mean, certainly it would be an improvement to get the pipeline out of the straits. It's a danger and a genuine threat to the health of the Great Lakes, and that concerns me a great deal. My interest in historical matters and the other ends of the pipeline and situations like petrochemical refining in Sarnia has to do with thinking of the shutdown of Line 5, though, as more than just a matter of protecting the Great Lakes. It is emblematic of the dire need, we're decades behind now, on an energy transition that doesn't just help us to stop emitting greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, but also helps us to rectify some of the reckless environmental injustices that have attended the fossil fuel era more generally. And that's our real opportunity. Shutting down Line 5 is the first step toward creating a world in which we inflict less harm on ecosystems and on people.
Do you fear, and I'm with you completely, but do you fear that we're losing Americans' interest in climate change? I mean, I recently saw a Pew poll showing that 68% of Democrats or Democratic leaners say that climate change is harming people in the U.S. 68%, that's near 70. That's pretty good, but I guess I would have thought that was a little higher. Sadly, only 22% of Republican voters believe climate change is harming people. Is that sounding some alarm bells for you?
It's a thing that I worry about all the time. But I do think that generally speaking, a small percentage of the population that for whatever reasons simply refuse to accept basic science. You know, I think we've come a long way in public acceptance of basic facts of anthropogenic climate change. But I think the real barrier is no longer getting people to simply believe the scientists. I think the real problem is how we make this transition. I think that we feel stuck. You know, I mean, I teach courses about oil and literature with my students, and they are often recognize the urgent need for things to change, but they're just not sure how to let go of the world as it has been made by these fossil fuels. And so, like, one of the ways I address that question, and so this is why I'm not completely despairing, is I just think we need to talk a little bit less about what might mean we have to give up, I don't know, our cars or whatever. And we need to talk more about what it is we have to gain. And, you know, the kind of thing that we have to gain is less emisceration, is less pollution, is less harm to creatures and to human health, a more equitable society. I mean, there's a lot to be gained from a new energy regime. I think more than there is to be lost by, I don't know, the roar of an internal combustion engine, however pleasing we might find that.
Right. Exactly. And I'm with you there on that front completely. We can't stop and we got to continue here because, you know, again, I said that 70% of Democrats were saying it's going to harm people. I just feel like I love the way you put it. We are stuck right now.
Yep.
And I fear where that next step is going to come and when it's going to happen and if it's going to be way too late. In fact, we may be too late in some instances.
Hey, well, we've certainly taken a couple of steps back. I mean, the Biden's Inflation Reduction Act was actually a really good piece of legislation.
I agree.
And it was the first positive, significant steps for greenhouse gas reduction that we've seen in a really long time. And, you know, unfortunately, that's been rolled back, but that doesn't mean we can't gain political power and reinstitute similar measures and maybe even more ambitious ones.
Hey, real quick, what is the current all about?
The current is all about the fight to shut down Line 5 and the Great Lakes, but also taking a more expansive view of what that battle is really about, which is not just about the water that we all love, but it's all about protecting the environment and combating climate change and creating a better world.
All right. Well, I will make sure to put a link to The Current wherever anyone is listening to this show. Dr. Jeffrey Insko, thanks so much for spending time with us here to share your expert input on everything that's happening with Line 5. You write some, like I said, you give a lot of great background, historical background also, into everything about Line 5 that I think really does help tell the full story of where we are today and where we should be going. And so, Dr. Insko, thank you again, and I'd love to have you back on soon.
Thank you for reading. Thank you for having me on, Pat. It's been a pleasure, and I hope to chat with you again soon as well.
You're listening to Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Left of Lansing is now on Patreon. You can check out a complete archive of the show and other stellar content Pat doesn't share on the show. Visit patreon.com/leftoflansing. Become a member for free. But we won't be upset if you drop off a $5 donation when you visit. At the very least, it will help Pat pick up the bill the next time we meet up for lunch. I think I deserve it. And now you deserve more Left of Lansing.
A special thanks again to Jeffrey Insko from The Current for being on the show. And again, I'll supply all of those links that we talked about as well as a link to The Current Substack page. I'm keeping the Left of Lansing web poll up for another week because I like to get some more numbers on it. Again, the question this week will be, how would you grade Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer's second term, A, B, C, or D? YouTube, Patreon page, as well on Twitter is where you can vote. Time now for the Left of Lansing last call. Well, you like my take on Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer's second term? Yeah, I'll tell you, it freaking blows. Let's talk about the news this week where Governor Whitmer showed up and stood side by side with billionaire tech bro corporate authoritarians for the groundbreaking of that hyperscale data center in Saline Township. Now, originally, the cost, I think, was around $7 billion, but now I'm seeing numbers as high as $56 billion. I talked to you last week over how Republican Governor Mike DeWine pushed the pause button on new data centers after reporting from Signal Ohio shows the data center sales exemption cost the state more than $1.5 billion last year and almost 12 times the state's $136 million forecast. So in Ohio, this is destroying local governments over the amount of lost revenue and sales taxes, and yet that number is still not completely known. But here in Michigan, we're full steam ahead, no matter how much the working class feels about it, no matter how much the working class is against it. Because what does the working class matter? Nothing at all. Now, this massive data center in Saline Township is being built for Oracle, the $700 billion IT and software company, and its customer OpenAI, according to some awesome reporting by good friend of the show, Bridge Michigan's Paula Gardner. And it's being built by regional companies, which was founded by billionaire and Trump buddy Stephen Ross. And Oracle, the IT and software company, is run by one of the richest men in the world, Larry Ellison. His wealth, by the way, continues to accumulate, even though the working class is suffering in this Trump economy. The stock market keeps betting big on artificial intelligence. And when that's happened in the past in other industries, when we've just gone so big on those industries, I mean, what has ever gone wrong? Especially when we have a little safeguards, especially when we don't really have any kind of regulations on them, any kind of protections for the working class. And then who ends up paying in the end? Oh, that's right. It's the working class. The Ellison family, of course, gobbled up Paramount and hired Barry Weiss to destroy CBS News and 60 Minutes so that it would, from now on, put the Epstein class in a better light. Is the New York Times, by the way, proud that it really foisted Barry Weiss on all of us years ago? Thanks, New York Times. But I digress. So this data center in Saline Township is going to be part of the $500 billion Stargate plan to build out United States artificial intelligence infrastructure. And Paula Gardner from Bridge Magazine says that Dear Leader Trump announced this Stargate project back in 2025, and its investors, SoftBank, OpenAI, Oracle, and MGX, are making what experts call among the largest private computing and data center projects in history. Remember when Dear Leader Trump was the working class candidate? No, he's just working for the billionaire class. He's working for the corporate authoritarians. He's working for the Epstein class. Anyway, Governor Whitmer, Michigan's Democratic governor, mind you, jumped all over this plan from Dear Leader and pushed for AI data centers in the state. And so Democratic leaders, led by former Speaker of the House Joe Tate, who, by the way, is endorsing Haley Stevens in the Senate primary for the Democrats, he scrapped a slew of working class bills during the lame duck session of 2024 to pass huge tax breaks for, that's right, billionaire tech bro data centers. Because if there's one major lesson Democrats took from the 2024 shellacking at the polls, it's that we should have given more to corporations. Now, Whitmer appeared at this groundbreaking event in Saline Township, and here's the start of Whitmer's remarks at the groundbreaking for this data center known as The Barn. And, well, here, I'll play it for you. This is courtesy of WXYTV Channel 7 in Detroit.
You know, we are breaking ground on the largest economic deal in Michigan history, and it is a huge, huge undertaking. And it's not the typical barn that you see in this area. This one will hold servers, not farm animals. The barn will be one of the most advanced AI infrastructure projects in the United States and bring tens of billions of dollars to the state of Michigan.
First, I'm not sure why we're celebrating that family farms keep disappearing by saying this barn won't hold animals. I don't know. That just seemed completely off from the start to me. But the second part is what really flabbergasted me. Whitmer claims this data center will be a huge boon for the state, bringing in, what'd she say, tens of billions of dollars to Michigan. Now, if that's true, if that is really true, then what was the point of Whitmer and the Democratic leaders in 2024 passing that bill, granting these billionaire tech bros and corporations that 6% sales tax cut? What was the point? If Michigan is such fertile ground for these data centers, well, then why give billionaire tech bros any kind of tax cuts? What's the point? Wouldn't they just build here anyway? I mean, we're being told Michigan is a great place for data centers. Why give them the tax breaks? What's the point? They're billionaires. Even worse is how Whitmer didn't even think of siding with the local government of Saline Township or even addressing their concerns. And by the way, this township, it voted against the barn from being built. But because the developer, Related Companies, whose founder is billionaire and Trump friend Stephen Ross, because Related Companies was going to sue Saline Township out of existence, Saline Township stepped aside, took a settlement, and hence, here is the data center. Remember, though, these guys are the true patriots that Whitmer chose to stand beside at the groundbreaking. People who want to just completely destroy working class towns. We're basically rolling out the red carpet for big tech corporate authoritarianism to take over here in the state. And we're not putting up any kind of resistance or at least any kind of a pause just until we understand what the hell is going on here. Remember, though, these guys are the so-called patriots that Whitmer chose to stand beside at this data center groundbreaking in Saline Township. Progressive state representative and good friend of this show, Dylan Wagella from Garden City, said the following. He said, "This is just a complete betrayal of the working class. Gretchen Whitmer selling out Michigan to big tech billionaires. AI is trying to replace the working class and destroying the planet while doing so." William Lawrence, progressive Democratic candidate for Michigan's 7th Congressional District, where Trump rubber-stamped Tom Barrett is currently holding that seat, said the following. He said, "The governor smiles wide alongside OpenAI CEO Sam Altman. Who does she work for? Billionaires like him or the people of the state of Michigan? This sure doesn't look good." Progressive Democratic candidate for Michigan's 11th district, Aisha Faruqi, released the following statement saying, "Michigan holds nearly 20% of the world's fresh surface water, a sacred trust we are obligated to protect for future generations. That is not negotiable. So let me be blunt. Governor Whitmer is smiling for photos with Sam Altman while handing over Michigan's water and energy to his data centers is a betrayal of every family that depends on these resources. This isn't economic development. It's a sweetheart deal for a Silicon Valley billionaire at Michigan taxpayers' expense. AI data centers consume millions of gallons of water and massive amounts of electricity. Who pays the price? Michigan families, farmers, and communities. Who pockets the profits? out-of-state tech oligarchs who will never have to live with the consequences. Enough, Michigan is not for sale. That is one hell of a statement there by Aisha Farooqi, and she really would be a breath of fresh air in Congress if we can get her there. Now, Whitmer talked to the media a day after her show with the tech bro authoritarians in Saline, and this is what she said in defense of AI data centers in Michigan. This is what she said, and I'm quoting, "I think one thing's very clear. Everyone has a cell phone in our pocket. We are all more and more consuming technology and data, and these data centers are going to be built. So my thought is, if we can hold them to a high standard, okay, and do it in Michigan, that's the best way to do it. Not watch them go everywhere else and do it in a really bad way." Or, Governor, you could have followed Mike DeWine in Ohio and put a moratorium on this for the time being. But you know what? I also seem to remember it wasn't too long ago that Whitmer and many others in Lansing were patting themselves on the back in banning cell phones in school, saying we have to protect our children. They need less time with their phones. Then a couple of months later, here she is saying, because we have these phones in our hands, we need to ignore the concerns and demands from local citizens and build these data centers for these billionaire tech bros right now. I don't know. I just found that part to be a little bit in opposition with one another. I know it's not a big deal, but I don't know. It was something that just hit my head. Anyway, Whitmer's pushing for Michigan to pay for these billionaire data centers, even after evidence showed major economic shortcomings for local municipalities, like I talked about in Ohio. And it's happening after we've dropped billions of dollars from the so-called SOAR fund in Michigan, that corporate welfare fund that's financed by us, the working class here in Michigan, and in which we got little in return. Well, that's again happening here. Now, I'm not saying AI technology doesn't do any good. Yes, it does. And I'm not saying that we can stop it. No, it is here. That is the reality. But that we put little safeguards for our environment, for our people, for our towns, for our working class, while providing massive tax breaks for these big tech bro authoritarians, many of which are against democracy and are working at destroying democracy in this country, well, that shows the working class who's really running this show. And worse, it shows who's willing to go along with the mass corruption to consolidate even more power in the hands of these tech bro authoritarians, does it not? Michigan Advances, John King, good friend of the show, makes a great closing argument in a column that he wrote this week. He said, "The debate over the Saline Township project has never been about whether artificial intelligence is important. Of course it is. But by framing opposition as a failure to appreciate AI's potential, Governor Whitmer sidesteps the actual concerns residents have been raising. Chief among them is who gets to decide the future of their community. After all, this is a project that was forced in by a lawsuit after local officials voted it down. The image of Whitmer hiding behind a folder in the Oval Office may have become shorthand for political awkwardness, but the image from Saline Township may become shorthand for something else, the ever-encroaching subordination of democracy to corporate power. The difference is that in the Oval Office, Whitmer's initial reaction was to try and disappear. In Saline Township, she wanted everyone to see. And that, in my mind, is the far more politically awkward picture." So I noticed that when the story broke and that picture by Colin Jackson of Michigan Public Radio Network showing Whitmer standing with Sam Altman of OpenAI and Oracle CEO Clay McGurk went viral, at that groundbreaking with a huge American flag behind them, I noticed that there were many progressives and many Democrats outside the state of Michigan expressing their stunned shock and disappointment with the governor. One person tweeted how this was a rare L for Whitmer, but a big one. And I responded, and so far I've gotten over 14,000 views on this one, which I'm surprised. But I said, well, this tells me that many are not paying attention. Whitmer's second term hasn't been all that stellar. I mean, tell me I'm wrong and show me where she's been outstanding in this second term. I feel like many people, you know, are still feeling and are still believing that that woman from Michigan has never changed, that we still have that Gretchen Whitmer. But no, she's long gone. And that's why in my Left of Lansing poll on what grade I would give Governor Whitmer, it would be a C minus. Many of you would probably think I'm being too harsh. Some of you would probably think I'm not being harsh enough. Yes, she's done a couple of nice things in her second term, like signing off on bills for the RX Kids program, a direct payment to new parents and their newborns in towns across the entire state. Remember, Republicans, MAGA Republicans in the state legislature would like to try to get that program axed because, again, they are pro-family. But at a time when corruption is running rampant from the Trump regime, and when working class Michiganders are suffering from the Trump economy, and also from his and Israel's war on Iran, and also from Trump's tariffs, it just seems tone deaf. Not to mention how she just touts her working relationship with Dear Leader and the Trump regime while ICE detention centers are running in her state and Dear Leader's anti-immigration movement is hurting Michigan that's desperate for people to live here in the state. Her actions just all appear weak, and she appears to be nothing but the figurehead for appeasement. And now here's Whitmer touting data centers, which is part of the Trump regime's Stargate plan, which is nothing but a huge giveaway to billionaire tech bros. And it places more power in their hands. I mean, we're in a fight for the working class and for our democracy. And Whitmer is deciding to show how she'll fight for the working class and democracy by working with the very small group of authoritarians who want to decimate both democracy and the working class. Make it make sense. When she had a chance to speak out and be a voice of opposition, a voice for the working class, she fled. It's not the first time she fled, as she signed that auto insurance reform bill that's hurt so many who now can't afford to pay for their injuries from auto accidents, and that was from her first term. The governor said that she's not closing the door on running for president. Like Michigan Advance's John King said, the picture of her with those tech bro billionaire authoritarians in Saline Township pretty much ended whatever presidential aspirations she ever had, at least as a Democrat. I'm sorry, but not much left to say after that, is there?
You're listening to Left of Lansing. Music for the show and everything else on Left of Lansing is provided by Wanderbeats. To hear the latest project and complete music archives, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site or subscribe to Space Leopard on YouTube. Now, back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Left of Lansing. Special thanks to Jeffrey Insko from The Current for being on to talk with us about the latest surrounding Line 5. Coming up next week, progressive state representative from Traverse City, Betsy Cafia, will be on to talk about the Mop Up Michigan campaign, government transparency or lack thereof in Michigan's government, the future of the Democratic Party, and much more. We haven't talked with Representative Cafia in quite some time, so I am looking forward to it. And if there's another thing I just remembered that I'm disappointed with Governor Whitmer about, it's how she didn't fight to make Michigan's government more transparent. Like many others before her, she really didn't want to make Michigan more transparent for the people, and that's sad. But that is why we do this show, to help make Michigan's political machine work for the people. And the people are taking power in their own hands by hopefully passing the mop-up Michigan ballot proposal if it does indeed get on the ballot. But you see, we don't have to wait around to see what happens in Lansing. We can make some changes ourselves. Until next time, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
You've been listening to Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Left of Lansing was produced by Pat Johnston, brainstormed by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and yes, hosted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. Thanks to our good friend Rich for website assistance, and thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. We thank Audio Boom for publishing the podcast every week. Visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to Michigan's premier progressive podcast, and we'll talk with you again next week.